Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Jamie Floyd in for Brian Lehrer on WNYC FM HD and AM New York, WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, and WNJO 90.3 Toms River. And right now we're going to talk about what's happening in Brooklyn, where police are trying to stop some bicyclists on a groping spree. That's right. Surveillance videos show teenagers grabbing several women in Brooklyn. The incidents all happened last week in downtown Brooklyn, Prospect Heights, and Brooklyn Heights. Authorities say that in each of the incidents, the teenage suspects rode up to the victims, grabbed their buttocks or breasts, and then pedaled away in what would be a criminal assault if charged, and in New York, would likely fall under our specific sex crime statute. There were no reported injuries, but it got us talking in the WNYC newsroom about what it means to be a woman in an urban environment, especially in summer. And so here to talk about what seems to be a continuum of conduct that puts women on the defensive all the time, but especially in summer, Holly Curl. She's the founder of StopStreetHarassment.org. It's a nonprofit organization dedicated to documenting and ending gender-based discrimination worldwide. And specifically, Holly, you are about street harassment, and we welcome you to WNYC.
Thank you for having me.
Holly, you know that women in New York City often talk about the outrageous things men say to them, do to them, or propose doing to them on the street, on the subway, on their way to work, even on their way home tonight. It's not just in New York. Women report this harassment, even from some of our more bucolic suburbs. So what I want to do, Holly, even before we get started, is ask our listeners to participate in this conversation, because I think this really is a place where radio conversation can make a difference. So listeners, help us out. If you are a woman, we want to hear about your experience, from subway gropers to catcallers. How do you react or respond? And if you are a man, can you explain the behavior, catcalling in particular, but even something more dangerous? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or call us to tell us what you have been teaching your sons about this behavior, or your nephews, or your grandsons. And parents, what do you tell your daughters as they approach the age where they will have to expect street harassment, or worse? 212-433-WMYC. That's 212-433-9692. So Holly Curl, Stop Street Harassment. There is a continuum, isn't there? I want to use this segment to distinguish first between sexual violence, the groping bicyclist, which is a crime here in New York, and catcalling, which I want to explain is harmful, though arguably less serious, as all part of a continuum. So will you help by beginning to explain that continuum to our listeners?
Yes, you're right. It is a continuum. So a commonality from groping to catcalls is disrespect and lack of consent for the person who is the target of those behaviors. They haven't consented to having someone, you know, call out to them or yell at them in a disrespectful way, just as they haven't given consent to having someone grab them on the street. And another connection that makes it part of a continuum is that while on the surface a catcall may seem harmless, people who are targets of it, especially women or LGBTQ-identified individuals, never know when that might escalate into groping, into assault, even into murder.
And it does sometimes escalate from catcalling to following someone to the point of fear of an assault, battery being a fear of an assault, following them down the street, following them to their car. And then I guess it could at that point escalate, depending on the nature of the perpetrator, to a touching, an unwanted touching, any unwanted touching being an assault, correct?
Correct. And even it doesn't even have to have that middle step of following. There's plenty of, you know, stories that we hear from people, women in particular, who are harassed or catcalled, and maybe they don't respond the way the man wants them to. They ignore it. They say, no, thank you. They say, leave me alone. And the man will throw trash at them, throw bottles at them, you know, attack them, just simply because they didn't give the response he felt he was entitled to.
And to be clear, when you touch someone with something else, a bottle, the example that Holly just gave, or any object, you don't have to touch them with your physical person, your hands, that too is assault and battery under the law. So, you know, it's interesting to me that we have these incidents in Brooklyn that are so egregious, the bike gropers, but on the continuum, we'll get to the catcalling in just a minute, but on the continuum, of course, are actual instances of assault, and they're fairly frequent, Holly, according to all kinds of research studies. Back in 2007, the New York Times surveyed 1,800 women about subway assault, and of those, nearly two-thirds said they had been sexually assaulted on the subways. Now, this is a range of behaviors, but they said they had been touched, groped, or felt the threat of sexual assault. More than 9 in 10 of the 10 of the respondents said that they did not tell the MTA or the police. And I know your group has also studied public transportation and sexual assault and harassment. What have you found?
Yes, last year we worked with a national surveying firm, and they conducted a nationally representative survey on street harassment, which incorporated public spaces like public transportation, parks, streets, stores, and found that 65% of women and 25% of men had experienced unwanted sexual harassment. And what was especially alarming was that around 1 in 4 women overall, not of that two-thirds, but overall, 1 in 4 women had experienced groping, sexual touching, and other forms of assault. And almost 1 in 10 said they had been forced to do something sexual, so essentially sexual assault or rape.
All right, we're going to take a call from Maria. She is calling from here in Manhattan. Maria, you are on WNYC with Holly Curl.
Thank you so much for taking my call. I was so moved by this topic because of what happened to me when I was a young girl of 14 or 15 living in Manhattan, taking the train from the A train from Washington Heights by myself. And I had, and I still have to this day, fairly large breasts. And as the A train was pulling from close to 125th Street, a man stood in front of me. He kind of cornered me, and I felt like a trapped animal, frankly. And then as we were pulling into 59th Street, he just grabbed at my breast like he wouldn't let go. I felt so violated, and I was even horrified that nobody was coming to my assistance. They just kind of looked like, wow, what's happening? And then when the train stopped, I ran out, and I went outside, and I just felt terrible. And I've spoken about it to friends and family. I've never reported to the police, but I wish I had had more gumption to have said something out loud to have shamed this man. I mean, this man who was old enough to be my father, frankly, and just reported it, and not allowed myself to feel like a victim.
You were just a child, though.
I was 15, and I'm 55 now, and it, to this day, it still haunts me that I didn't speak for myself.
What would be your advice, Maria, to other young girls who might experience the same horrible thing?
Oh, my gosh. Just shout. Don't be silent anymore. Don't be silent. Just make attention. Bring the shame to this person who is doing this to me, a child.
Maria, thank you so much. Well, you're not silent anymore, and we thank you very much for your courage in calling us. Clearly, it stayed with you all these 40 years. We appreciate it. The boards are lit up, not surprisingly, entirely with women. I really would encourage some men to call us because I want to understand the psychology of this, or perhaps, and you know, it's interesting, men who don't behave this way or even don't catcall do talk amongst themselves and certainly have lessons to share with their sons. So I'm hopeful we can get a man to call 212-433-WMYC, 212-433-9692, and try and help us understand the conversations held within the male community. I think we might have one man on the line. Oh, I see him. We're going to go to him next. But first, let me go to Haley in Brooklyn. Haley, I think you have an experience to share as well.
Hello.
Hello.
Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you so much for calling.
This is something that I have thought a lot about and have written a lot about in social media. And I've had a lot of experiences since I moved to New York. I moved here a few years ago. I'm 29, and I've had a lot of catcalling experiences, and recently, or last year, twice, I was groped, once by someone on a skateboard and once by someone when I was riding my bike on a moped, two guys on a moped. And it's just such a humiliating experience, but also infuriating, and you don't know the best reaction, what you should say to these people, if you should say anything, and there's nothing that, like, makes it feel better in that moment of humiliation that you feel like you're making a difference in their life or your own that makes you feel better about the experience. And I don't know, I was just interested if anybody else had any things that they've done in that moment that at least can make them feel better, that they've, like, changed their feeling about it, or, I don't know, also I feel like men need to know that this is, even if you're just, you think, if a guy just thinks that they're giving a compliment to a woman, it's a threatening act, because it never happens when you're with your mom or something, or like a man, another man, or even if you're with like a larger group of women, it just, they only seem to do it when you're alone and like vulnerable, and maybe they don't know that they're asserting power, but I think that's really what it boils down to psychologically.
Haley, you've made so many interesting points about power, about whether this is some form of compliment. I bet you it's a little of both, and we're going to ask Colleen in just a moment. But I am really curious where you moved from.
From North Carolina. And I think it occurs more here because people walk a lot more in New York. I mean, it does happen in North Carolina. If you happen to be walking on the street, guys will drive by and sometimes see things, but just happens a lot more because you're out and visible, I don't know, and there's a lot more people, too. So,
all right, so you've moved us along to what is seemingly a more common behavior, though there's really no way to quantify it, and that is street harassment, what we sometimes refer to as catcalling. It is very prevalent in New York City, but actually across the country, and you point out, Haley, that we walk a lot here. We're outside a lot. We're not driving the way we drive in Los Angeles, for example. A study authored by the advocacy group Hollaback and Cornell University found that 85% of nearly 5,000 women polled across the country experienced street harassment for the first time before age 17. So dads out there, if you're listening and you have a daughter coming up on her 15th or 16th birthday, think about that. And how about this? More than 11% of the women surveyed reported their first harassment before age 11. So let me come back over to you, Holly. Haley wanted a little bit of advice. What should women do? Let's put aside for a moment why men do this. And I'm going to ask that question next. But what do you suggest is the appropriate response in these situations? Just ignore them, the advice my mother always gave me. B, take them on. Probably not a good idea, but maybe that's your advice. Engage in a conversation, say thank you. I mean, what is the appropriate response? I've been on this planet 50 years and have been grappling with this issue. And by the way, Haley, they do sometimes catcall when you're with your mother, because my 16-year-old daughter and I get this all the time, though I think the power element is there. So, Holly Curl, this is your area of expertise, stop street harassment. When you are the individual like Haley in Brooklyn, how do you stop the street harassment in the moment?
Sure. First, I just wanted to thank Maria and Haley both for sharing their stories. It's I mean, this is so, so important to just bring forward our stories and let people know that it isn't a compliment. It is threatening, and it impacts you potentially for the rest of your whole life. So what do you do in the moment? That is a challenging question because I wish I had one answer. And here's the magic formula, and I would use it myself if I had it. But the reality is every situation is different, and sometimes ignoring it is best. Sometimes humoring them is best. Sometimes standing up for yourself and shouting is best. And that is really what is hard about this issue, is you have a split second to decide how am I going to respond? What am I going to do? And so the best advice that I can give you and to all the listeners is to explore different ways of responding. Stop Street Harassment has, different suggestions for how to respond. We have a book, 50 Stories About Stopping Street Harassers, where you can read how 50 people were able to stop harassers in a variety of ways. And then just practice it yourself. I know Street Harassment, again, it happens so quickly, you have a second to decide. So if you've practiced a few different types of responses, it's more likely you'll be able to do something beyond potentially just ignoring it. Because, again, sometimes ignoring it is the right response in that moment and helps you feel safer, but it often doesn't help you feel better. And I've found from talking to a lot of different people that often being able to stand up for yourself in the moment does feel better. And the reality is it could escalate if you ignore it. It could escalate if you yell at them. So I think doing whatever makes you feel safe and empowered is the best response for you in that moment. So just to summarize, there isn't one response that works best. So kind of exploring and practicing different types of reactions that may feel okay for you personally is my best advice. And then just try to do that in the moment. And know, of course, that it's never your fault and that there are so many other people out there going through what you're going through. And, you can get a lot of help afterwards just by talking to people, sharing your story, tweeting about it, and getting support that you need afterwards, because it's really upsetting when it happens.
And the Stop Street Harassment website is fantastic, so I would commend that to all of our listeners. I do want to bring into the conversation from the Brooklyn Movement Center's Anti-Street Harassment Bike Patrol someone who has an innovative answer to Haley's question, and that's Antonine Pierre. So, Antonine, are you with us? I hope she's with us, because they have a terrific, very unusual approach to this. All right, I'm going to continue.
Hello?
Can you hear Antonine,
me?
Are you there?
Yes.
Excellent. Have you been able to listen to some of what has been going on, especially the last caller, Haley?
Yeah, it's been good to hear both Haley and Maria. I think when we talk about the work that we do going out on bicycles to impact how street harassment is happening in Bed-Stuy and Crown Heights, we think about what Maria said, that she said that no one came to her assistance when this thing happened when she was 15, that she felt terrible, that she wished she had done something and not felt like a victim. And for us, we want going out on bicycles and intervening in instances of street harassment to be a way to support people who are in our community, people who are getting harassed, and also to be a way to have those conversations with the men who are actually doing the harassment, because it's great to be able to have values that you teach your children. But since we all sort of live in this community together, there is a question as to how are we holding each other accountable and how are we asking for the community that we want to live in.
So let's take a step back. You're on bicycles.
Right.
Your mission is also to stop street harassment, but it's a very innovative approach. Let's help the viewers visualize what you do. What exactly are you doing on these bicycles when the street harassment occurs? What give us a set the scene for us.
Yeah. So the Brooklyn Movement Center has a group called No Disrespect, who does anti-street harassment work, as I said, in Crown Heights and Bed-Stuy, which is a gentrifying neighborhood. It's a historically Black neighborhood. And for us, being, relying on the law, relying on police to come and intervene and sort of in these instances was not really an option. The idea that you could call a cop and you could tell them that you had been harassed and they could say that you were asking for it or you could be taken in on a different charge. These are things that have happened. So we had to think, what are ways that we can hold our own community accountable for street harassment, and how can we, one, intervene, right? So when we often are harassed, we think, wow, there are lots of people around and no one said anything, right? So how can we be that person, that support? And then on a different note, you know, you're not always going to ride around and see a lot of street harassment necessarily, but how are we also taking that time that we're out there to stop and talk to groups of men, to talk about what's happening, how they're harassing queer folks and trans folks and women in this Black neighborhood, and what it means for them to really have the same kind of respect for us that they should, that they have for their brothers in the community.
Mm-hmm. And both of you are really trying to get to, both Holly and Antonine are really trying to get to the larger systemic issue. It's not just about stopping the one incident, although we want to help the woman who is being victimized, or as you say, Antonine, the man, or somebody who may be transgendered, whoever it is that is being victimized at that moment. We want to stop that moment, but we're trying to get to the larger systemic problem, the issues of power that lead to the behavior overall, right?
Right, right. And right. For us, it's being able to ride around and be present also means that we're not normalizing, or we're pushing up against the way that street harassment is normalized, right? So even, you know, catcalling isn't really a word that we use when we talk about street harassment, because catcalling is something that's culturally accepted, right? Like it makes you think of...
Is it?
Well, it is, because there's in pop culture, there's this idea of this construction worker and he's on the street and he's whistling at a pretty woman, what, you know? And what we're trying to buck up against is, one, there are a lot of different ways that street harassment looks, and two, it's not okay. There shouldn't be a cultural reference without also some kind of cultural check.
Let me ask both of you, Holly, I'll come to you first. Why do men do this? You know, there was about a year ago that YouTube video that went viral, and there was some controversy around it, and we can talk about the controversy, some socio-political controversy. There's some race politics, which we can get to. Hopefully we'll have time. But 10 hours walking in New York City as a woman. She gets, I won't say catcalled. She gets harassed 108 times in that 10 hours. Why do men do this? Do they think they're complimenting you? Is it a power play? Do they really think you're... I always wanted to say, oh, yeah, I'll go out with you. What time do you want to meet up? I mean, do they think they're going to get a date? I mean, what's going on? Or is it different in every case? Does each man have a different psychology? And maybe we can't generalize about what is going on with street harassment. But I think if we could get to the underlying pathology, we might be able to change the systemic problem. Holly, you first, and then Antonine, I want to come over to you.
Sure. I mean, street harassment is a symptom of other forms of inequality, from sexism to homophobia, transphobia, and racism. And this, it's just a manifestation of that. And so when it comes to sexism, men are in a position of power over women. And one way they can exert that is by intimidating them and sexualizing them in public spaces.
But when you say, Holly, when you say they're in mm-hmm. a position of power, often mm-hmm. they're not. The men who are doing this street harassment. You mean physical power? What kind of power are you talking about?
Yeah.
Socioeconomic power?
I mean, sure. As a class overall, they are in a position of power politically, economically, physically. Sure, at an individual level, that may not always be the case. But overall, they are in this position where men can often harass women and get away with it with immunity. There's no recourse. And, you know, when women say something, they're told they're overreacting. It's a compliment. Get over it. So that's sort of the dynamic at play. But as far as why do individual men, you know, stepping away from the larger picture, why do individual men harass? You're right. It does vary a lot by individual. And I think particularly with young men, they may just be mimicking what they've seen other men do. And a lot of our media portrays catcall specifically as a compliment. And so they may think, hey, this is what I'm supposed to do. This is what women like. And I've even heard from men who were gay men who were in the closet, who said, I harassed women as a way to show that I was straight, to try to prove they were straight.
Insecurity.
I think it really can vary.
All right.
Well, it's just a way to to act out masculinity in our society, unfortunately. And then some men are purposely trying to intimidate women, or they are maybe trying to seek sexual gratification, for example, men who flash or masturbate in public.
Antonina, I want to come to you, but I have actually a couple of men who've called in, so I want to take them and then get your response to what they have to say. Salam, on Bayshore, you're on WMYC.
Hi, good morning. I loved what Antonina was saying. What we do, so I serve as a regional president of Muslim men within the New York metro area. And what we do to train our youth is when it comes to women, you know, keep your gaze down. You know, don't go around looking at women. Don't gawk at them. Don't look at them like they're a piece of meat. And just focus on what you're out there to do, whether it's going to work, going to school, going to grocery shopping. Don't go around making your hormones become raged. You know, they will dissipate. They will calm down. And what you realize is after doing this practice of lowering your gaze, you realize that looking at women like pieces of meat is nothing. It's not helping society, and it's not helping you. So you end up focusing, and you end up gaining more control over your senses. And when women are speaking with you, listen with your ears. Don't listen with your eyes. Don't listen with your eyes at all. And this is helping show other Muslim men that who are the Muslim youth who are mimicking their elders, listen, I see that the elders are doing this, so I know that I should be doing this as well. And it comes down to being role models for the next generation. And that's what we're doing.
Salam, thank you so much for your call and your leadership and your thoughtfulness. Daryl in Manhattan is on the line. You're on WNYC. Thank you for calling in.
Hi, how are you?
Go right ahead.
Your previous guest touched on a few things.
We're tight on time, so pick one or two.
The lady that was talking about, you know, that you know, there's a class and socioeconomic, I guess, dynamic that's in play when guys engage in street harassment or catcalling. A lot of guys, I think, they, you know, it's sort of like a, hey, look at me sort of thing. It's not necessarily something that's directed towards the women. It's just, you know, I think it's just very difficult to even explain it.
Daryl, you've worked in both environments?
Yeah, I mean, there are things I've worked in sort of blue collar professions before, and even now, and work in white collar. There is a certain dynamic that occurs in blue collar professions that does not occur in white collar professions. Absolutely, and you can see that also in the, not to say that they're not guys that are, you know, around the water cooler that say rude things or say rude things to, you know, their other office workers, but there's definitely an atmosphere that does not exist in a sort of blue-collar, working-class job, or, you know, amongst guys that are engaged in that profession. And I think the overarching, to the point that one of your other callers, the catcalling and the way that guys are talking to these women, the overarching idea is that there is, yes, it's proof of another deeper dynamic about, you know, the role of men and the role of women and how they, you know, exchange themselves. But absolutely, you know, what goes on between some guys that are, you know, working out in the street versus what guys are doing in an office, they come from completely, totally different places. You know, and most often it is somewhat benign, but it's, you know, it's not something that you can generalize about.
Antonina, I want to come to you, and, you know, I feel like I could do the rest of the show on this, but I have a lot of other good topics I have to get to. It seems to me, and this came up with 10 hours of walking in New York City as a woman, that there are very careful racial, class, and socioeconomic lines that we have to walk here. When men are working outside in a group, there may be a certain power they feel because they're in a group, not so much because they're working class guys. And any group of people feels more power because they're together. Am I not right?
Right, right. And to speak a little bit to your last caller's point, you know, race and class are a huge part of how we experience harassment, how people do harassment. Harassment is going to look different in different spaces. We understand, as people who are frequently harassed, what it feels like for someone to overstep their boundaries to get into your personal space. And no, that may not be a man on Wall Street standing around on the corner in a suit, okay, saying, "Hey, baby," in the way that that may happen on Fulton in Bed-Stuy, but it is important to recognize that they're both harassment, because to not do that is a very clear exercise of class privilege, to say that, well, when the Wall Street dude does it, it's not harassment, right? And at the end of the day, this is all a symptom of this, the gender policing. It's all, how do I show myself to be more masculine? How do I take control of this space? How do I police whether people are, how people are women, how they dress as women, whether they're gender nonconforming, whatever that is. And the question at the core of anti-street harassment work is, how do we change our culture and make it one where men no longer really feel emboldened to interrupt the movement of people who they do not see as equals as themselves?
Well, that is the mission, and we have a lot of work to do, but with the two of you on the journey, I think we are at least moving in the right direction. Physically moving, in your case, Pierre. I wish you both the best of luck with it, and we'll welcome you back on the show anytime you want to come on and talk about these important issues. Antonin Pierre is with the Brooklyn. Berkeley's a good place, too, but the Brooklyn Movement Center, and Holly Curl, of course, the founder of Stop Street Harassment. Thanks to both of you this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And coming up next, a birth mother's memoir. I'm Jamie Floyd, in for Brian Lehrer. Stay with us.